took this bag with the two cats, put one in each end, and fastened it over this horse's back. Then he got on his load and began to yell scat just as loud as he could. Well, these two cats began to scratch and yowl, and that horse tried his best to get away then, and he held him back. But after a little bit, with all this scratching and yowling going on, the horse was ready to go. And after that, all he had to do to this horse to get him to pull hard was to just yell scat. One of the funny things that we all felt was rather clever and bony happened after he'd been down as far as Port Jervis with a raft of hemlock logs. They landed there and were coming back to Hancock for another trip, another float. And they got to Boney and two other men, a man by the name of Ad Van Loan and another one by the name of Mike Snyder, and they were two notorious characters too, but they weren't quite like Boney. They weren't just that type, but they were noted fellows. Well, they were three of a kind. They got off the beaten track somehow and didn't get to go back just when they should, and found themselves at the railroad station when they did get ready to go. They wanted to go to Hancock, and the man told them that there wouldn't be any train till the next morning. Well, they didn't like that, but they said they had to get back. They had to get up there in a hurry to get another raft to come down. Well, the fellow said, it's too bad for you boys, but there's nothing we can do about it. There won't be any train till the morning. Well, they made up their mind that there must be something that could be done. So they had with them a few of the things that they used in rafting, a crank auger, for instance, and an axe. An auger, what we know used to call a crank auger, was just an ordinary carpenter's auger, of an inch and a quarter bit on it. And then they would, the blacksmith would weld a stem that stood up about here, and then there'd be a crank on it. So the man that was boring the holes in the logs to put the bows and plugs in could just stand up straight. Well, one of them took this auger and started boring holes in the floor of the station. And the other one with the axe began to chop designs in the woodwork around different parts of the depot. And the other one, the third one, went out in the yard and began to dig up some of the shrubbery and put it in a different place. Well, this station agent, of course, my heavens, he was frantic. He didn't know what to do about such a situation. And as a matter of fact, there was nothing he could do. But it was only a short time he got busy on the wire. And in a little while, an engine and a car came along from Port Jervis, loaded these outlaws on, and they was gone to Hancock in a hurry and got rid of them. One of the places where they stopped down below, the hotel keeper's name was Kiesler. But many of the men, after they'd been going down for a while, got to know Mr. Kiesler. And they nicknamed him, or they shortened his name, Kiesler, to Kiesel. So this evening, Boney felt like he'd like to have a drink, and of course he never planned on paying for a drink. He always wheedled somebody out of a drink. And he'd do it in such a way that they liked it and would most always buy him one. Well, the proprietor of the hotel, Mr. Kiesler, knew very well what was in Boney's mind, so he said, well, when Boney said he'd like to make an epitaph for his gravestone, Mr. Kiesler said, fine, that's nice, Boney, I'd like that, and here's your drink, because I know that's what you'd like to have. So Boney took his drink, and then he said, Mr. Kiesel died of late by angels waft to heaven's gate. And then he stopped. And he looked very, very susceptible. He looked dry as he could. And the hotel proprietor knew, of course, very well what was in his mind. And he thought probably Boney had enough drink anyway. He said, no, Boney, you can't have any more to drink. Then Boney said, up slipped the devil, sly as a weasel, and down to hell he kicked old Kiesel. The men who worked with Boney and with others during those years, of course, were that sort of thing was what entertained them. They didn't have any radios, they didn't have any television, and they were hard workers. There was hundreds of millions of feet of the finest hemlock timber that ever grew out of the ground, went down the Delaware River between the end of the Revolutionary War and about 1915 or 16. But for 100 years, for a whole century, it was just a stream of this beautiful timber going down that river. Some of it had to go about 300 miles. They would go as far up as Delhi on the West Branch and above Downsville. All three of those little towns that were drowned out with the building of the Downsville Board of Water Supply Reservoir were all notorious lumber towns, Arena and Shavertown and Pepacton. In the spring of 1860-something, it was after the war, after the end of the Civil War, up to the end of May, 3,140 hemlock log rafts had gone over the dam at Lackawaxen. Well, those rafts would run around from 150,000 to 200,000 board feet of lumber in each one. Some of them would have a lot of stuff piled on top of them, loaded on. So you can see what the pioneers and those who came after them did during those years. They built the country and made a great contribution to the whole eastern United States in its early days. And the men like Boney Quillen and Snyder and Van Loan and my own father and my grandfather were in that work and made their contribution and had a great big time while they were doing it.
Each year at the festival, we dip into the collection of folk songs that we have, and the next song will be one of the songs that we collected at previous festivals. I'm going to ask that be introduced by Norman Kasdan, who has done much of the collecting, along with Herbert Halfray, and who is going to have a book come out sometime within the next year with many of the Catskill songs. Norman, would you introduce the song?
Well, I don't want to take up your time with talk about the song. You want to hear the song. It's a very lovely melody that we first learned from Edson Van Wagner, who used to live up on Red Hill near Claryville. It's called The Maid on the Shore, and it's a song that seems to be known just in the northeastern part of the United States and in the maritime provinces of Canada. We don't know just how it got started, but it does go back to a very ancient legend about the siren, the same sirens that Homer wrote about in his poems. She's a very lovely lady and a very lovely song. It's going to be sung by Norman Lofsky.
you bring me that maid on the shore, oh, I will make you a present, I can't tell you what. It'll be something costly and dear, oh dear. It'll be something costly and dear. When the steward, he ran and he lowered the boat, and quickly he rowed it to shore. And these were the very first words that he said, kind madam, won't you come on board, aboard? Kind madam, won't you come on board? Our captain has jewels, our captain has rings, such things as you ladies do wear, oh. And if you will come and buy some of him, he will row you along by the shore, oh shore. We will row you along by the shore. Now I will treat to the richer I wine that sparkles so bright and so clear, oh. And then you will sing us a merry light song to compare with a merry light crew, oh crew, to compare with a merry light crew. Then the maiden, she sat in the stern of the boat, her voice was so fair and so clear, oh. She sang them so sweet, so neat, so complete, sang the captain and sailors asleep, oh sleep, sang the captain and sailors asleep. Were my men angry, or were my men drunk, or were they sunk deep in despair, oh, to see her get away with her beauty so gay? Don't I wish that I had her once more, oh more, don't I wish that I had her. Well, she robbed them of silver and robbed them of gold, and she robbed them of costly aware, oh. And the captain's bright sword she used for an oar, for to row herself back to the shore, oh shore, for to row herself back to the shore. There she stands all alone on the strand, a-waving her handkerchief fair, oh, saying, you are the captain that sails these salt seas, and I'm still the maid on the shore, oh, shore, and I am the maid on the shore.
Time has come.
Now you talk about the lazy men, you meet 'em while you may. They're always stony broken, but I can't say that I know. For I am just the other way, now I'm a man like this. I always have a quarter in my pocket, here it is. But I can't change it, no I can't change it. For it's one I've made myself, you see, and that's the reason it's sticking to me. But I can't change it, and I don't intend to try. But I hope to cheat a blind man in the street by and by. Now I had an invitation out, a wedding down the way. So I went into the store to buy me a new hat yesterday. I soon got what I wanted, and my purchase I did quit. But when I tried it on my head, oh, I found it wouldn't fit. But I can't change it, no, I can't change it. But when the clerk, he turned his back, I wiped the hat from off the rack. But I can't change it, and I don't intend to try. But I might get put to Sing Sing in the suite by and by. Then I thought that I'd get married like a lot of foolish men. I found the girl, I bought the ring, got married there and then. After I was married, I was taken down a peg. Her teeth was false, she wore a wig, and she had a wooden leg. But I can't change her, no I can't change her. For I thought I'd get no woman, you see, I got half a woman and half a tree. But I can't change her, and I don't intend to try. But I'll chop her up for firewood in the by and by. Change it, no I can't change it, for we wanted it a boy. But then I asked the nurse and she said no, and I asked her more than I ought to know. But I can't change it, and I don't intend to try. But I hope we'll have a dozen more in this week by and by.
Thank you.
play the organ.
If I should own a grocery store and sell just what I please. There's not a man could ever buy my good old Limburger cheese.
Well, the time is about up. I hope you all enjoyed this afternoon as much as the people who performed it. I'd like to ask before we leave, I'd like to ask all the campers of Camp Woodland, where Camp and Senior Camp remain seated. But also, with the exception of the cast of the Warren Sherwood play, there are a number of people here from Highland, and I think they would like to meet the players, and perhaps there is some information they might have of value, because we haven't finished learning about Warren Sherwood, and we'd like to know more about him. So suppose the cast goes out through that door and meets people from Highland. Is that all right? And as I said, Senior Camp and Work Camp.